Newton Media Group, a family of creative services, presents the Voice Over Work podcast. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at Think in Models, a structured approach to clear thinking and the art of strategic decision-making, written by Nick Trenton, narrated by Russell Newton. Introduction. Do you remember back in school when your math teacher always gave you a hard time about showing your work? She may have awarded some points for giving the correct answer, but what mattered more was showing her that you knew why the correct answer was the right one. Undoubtedly, this helped her see whether you'd actually learned anything, and that you hadn't just copied the answer from your friend. The dominant educational model today, however, doesn't actually encourage real learning. We present children with a stimulus, sit them down in front of an exam paper, then elicit the desired behavior, produce the right answer, and reinforce this with a reward, high marks, awards, praise, or even just the removal of a punishment. The result is a child knows the answers and performs perfectly within these fixed parameters. But so what? You've probably met someone who really excelled in such a grade school environment only to arrive at university and completely flunk everything. Everyone can see why this happens. The rules have changed, and what used to work doesn't work anymore. New answers are required, but the student doesn't know what they are anymore, and they don't know how to figure them out. In this book, there are no answers. It's not about adopting the correct mental attitude or performing the right behaviors so that you can earn a reward. You won't be told what the right path is, i.e., what to think. Instead, this book will show you the importance of learning to think rather than merely knowing the answer. It's the old teach a man to fish adage. If you know how to generate and use your own cognitive tools, there's no problem that is alien to you and no challenge that's outside your scope. What is knowledge? Isn't it interesting that human beings don't come into the world already possessing the knowledge they need to survive? At the very start of your life, you knew nothing. Chapter 1. How to be clear-minded. In the two examples in the introduction, prior bank knowledge was not only insufficient to solve the problem at hand, it actively impeded the process. This is what psychologists and managers alike have noticed for years and called the paradox of expertise. Though culturally we all admire and respect those individuals who have amassed enormous experience and expertise, the truth is that it's this prior knowledge that gets in the way of solving novel problems. Experts with knowledge in one particular area are often less capable of solving problems or generating innovative concepts precisely because they've spent more time than anyone doing the same thing over and over again. Expertise may actually come with more fixed and rigid thinking, a lack of flexibility, and all the errors that come with it. Experts become experts at using very particular and niche models that mean they resort to stereotyped ways of understanding the world. This works perfectly, until the problem falls outside of their mental schemas. Then, because experts additionally have an identity, all right, let's say ego, associated with their expertise, they may not even be able to perceive inefficiencies or mistakes and succumb to their old bias and tunnel vision, believing all along they're right. After all, they're the authorities. All of this is to say that none of us is immune to bias, habitual thinking, prejudice, cognitive errors, assumptions, and unconscious psychological influences in the way we create and use our mental models. Stubbornly clinging to expertise is not the only possible way we can trip ourselves up, however. In this chapter, we'll look at some fundamental ways that our... Chapter 2. How to Accurately See Reality. The more and more you look at, well, the way you look at things, the more you'll realize just how difficult it really is to make significant shifts. This is because it's something none of us does automatically. Every day, you more or less trust the data coming in from your sense organs. You generally believe what you see and hear around you, and you have no reason not to take your own word for it as you tell yourself endless mental stories day after day. But it takes something extra, some deliberate and purpose-driven decision to be different, to switch us out of habitual autopilot behavior and into conscious and autonomous action. How do you see the world? What do you see, and what don't you see? Is what you're perceiving accurate or useful? How does your mental model influence the way you see? What effect does this have on your life? And do you like this outcome? You can never see things from another angle unless you're willing to acknowledge that you are currently viewing things from any angle in the first place. You can never dig deeper if you have entirely convinced yourself that you're already seeing all there is to see. In essence, our mental models tell us who we are, how the world works, and what's possible for us. Before you take that at face value, isn't it worth examining these mental models? Being clear-minded was the goal of the previous chapter, i.e., learning to divest ourselves of those obstacles that stand between us and the world we're trying to more properly understand. But simply being free of bias and self-delusion doesn't mean we automatically see reality perfectly. We also need to consider the quality and accuracy of the model. Chapter 3, How to Think Critically and Determine Truth. In an earlier chapter, we saw that it's not what you think, but how you think. In this chapter, we're going to adapt this slightly to, if you know how to think, nobody can tell you what to think. So far, this book has been concerned with understanding the difference between knowledge and thinking, the importance of removing obstacles to clear thinking, and the value in learning to shift perspective to serve our needs and goals. Essentially, we've identified the target and the means. We've decided the destination we're traveling to and the kind of car we need to drive to go in that direction. Think of this chapter as a more detailed exploration of the literal nuts and bolts that make up that car. Knowing how to properly support and argue any claims you make, to think logically, and to critically navigate your way around other people's claims is a skill that can and should be developed. Sadly, it only takes one look at the world we live in today to see that the skills of civil discourse, debate, and critical thinking are in crisis. Yes, it's all about learning to think for yourself and make sure that you don't just believe everything you're told, but importantly, it's also about adopting a set of intellectual standards for yourself. As we've seen, getting at the truth of any matter has nothing to do with trumping our opponents or giving our ego a boost. It also goes beyond finding a bit of cleverness to get an edge in the workplace or in our studies. Rather, becoming a deep and sophisticated thinker is a reward in itself. Before we embark on gaining mastery over the tools of argument, we need to consistently remind ourselves of one thing. Our goal is to develop clear. Chapter 4, How to Think About Your Thinking. You may have read the questions in the previous chapter and thought to yourself, wow, what a lot of hard work. Who has time to nitpick over details to that extent in the real world, where we have to make decisions quickly? Why not just follow your gut and let your intuition guide you some of the way? It's a tempting and popular prospect. The world is complex and there isn't often time for analysis. So what about instinct? It's true that there's mounting scientific evidence for the many interesting ways the brain unconsciously makes decisions, i.e., how your intuition guides you, but one thing hasn't really changed. As useful as it may be, intuition is simply not a replacement for rigorous critical analysis. Nothing is a genuine substitute for logic and reason, and in fact, the more pressed for time you are, and the more complex your decisions, the less you should assume that information alone is enough. Intuition, not as trustworthy as it seems. We all like to believe that gut instincts hold some magical power. There's something appealing about it. You sit back and relax, and your unconscious mind magically finds solutions for you, almost like a superpower. And haven't all of us experienced the strength of intuition before, or seen the positive results after following a hunch? But this could be an example of pure confirmation bias, i.e., We remember all those instances where intuition paid off because they support our belief, all while conveniently forgetting about those times it didn't pay off. The less glamorous truth is that intuition and instinct are often little more than thinly veiled bias, prejudice, or unexamined belief. The very things we've already seen can derail reason. Our unconscious. Chapter 5, How to Think in Systems. By this point in the book, you might be starting to see that the question of how to think is extraordinarily complex. We can inhabit a whole universe of different mental models, or blends of each, or switch between them as need dictates. We can encounter contrasting mental models and engage with them, almost changing the reality of a situation by changing the perspective through which we perceive that reality. We even make models about the models we use, as we're doing with this very book, and use tools of critical thinking and analysis to unpick the very arguments that allowed us to establish the rules of critical thinking in the first place. Whew. Metacognition can get complicated. Systems thinking is a large, three-dimensional model capable of containing and managing all the complexity that comes with being an intelligent, conscious being, trying to become aware of and master its own thinking processes. Before we dive in and discover what it means to think in terms of systems, be aware that we're discussing higher-order, necessarily abstract concepts that may seem a little vague at times. We'll try to consider a few practical examples, but the essence of system thinking is beyond the detail. We can see systems thinking as encompassing an entire range of attitudes and principles. A system is a larger whole composed of smaller units, each working in its own way towards the greater function of the entire system. The system is orders of magnitude more complex. We can zoom in on one element to understand it, or we can look at that element's place in the system and gain insight by understanding its position within the whole. Systems thinking is the mindset that allows us to perceive and work with data from a higher order of understanding. Importantly, it enables us. Chapter 6, How to Think with Induction and Deduction. What we ultimately want to do whenever we reason is to arrive at some kind of conclusion we can trust. What distinguishes robust, logical, evidence-based thought from mere opinion or claim is how the information is structured and presented. We can arrive at a conclusion via different paths. On these paths, we lay down stepping stones, premises, and if they're sufficient, we'll arrive at our conclusion. Two main paths of reasoning are deductive and inductive reasoning, the focus of this chapter. You probably use both kinds without even knowing you do, or even a mix of both. But, as with all mental models and tools, they become infinitely more valuable when used with conscious intention. Deductive reasoning, to put it very simply, moves from the general to the specific. This is where we take broad, general ideas and concepts and, from them, try to say something true about a more specific situation. A common example goes as follows. Premise 1, all men are philosophers. Premise 2, Socrates is a man. Conclusion, Socrates is a philosopher. Premise 1 is a general idea that, when combined with the more specific premise 2, allows us to reach the conclusion. In this example, as long as we know both the premises are true, the conclusion must be true. In other words, the premises here prove the conclusion, not simply offer evidence or support for it. The validity of the argument, i.e., whether the conclusion logically follows, is, however, unaffected by the truth of the premises. You can have a logical argument that nevertheless has untrue premises and conclusion. For example, premise 1. This has been Think in Models, a structured approach to clear thinking and the art of strategic decision-making. Written by Nick Trenton, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2020 by Nick Trenton. Production copyright by Nick Trenton.
Amazon.com has more information regarding the author and this book.
With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Over Work podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.